This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 332. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, but not joining me this week once again, Adam Emmert. We knew it was going to be a tough couple weeks with his work schedule, so it is great that Rob Staton could record an extended look at the offense and the defense last week. So if you haven't yet listened to the first part of the coverage, you should really go back and take a listen to part one. Rob and I went heavy on the offensive side of the ball. We even went back to the 2018 draft and talked about some of the disappointment about not getting Nick Chubb out of that draft. But hey, we don't have to worry about the Seahawks taking a running back in the first round this year. If they do end up picking in the first round, I suppose the bigger news would be what they had to do to get back into the first round of this year's draft. So we won't be talking about the first round. We're not even going to be talking about what the 49ers or any of the other NFC West teams are going to be doing. We're going to be talking defense. And joining me to do it, he's Rob Staton of Seahawks Draft Blog. Let's start off with what I think is probably the biggest need for the team, and whether that's offense or defense, I kind of go toward cornerback. And gosh, if they were to sign Richard Sherman, you know, that would definitely take this as a need away. It'd still be probably a long-term need, but I'm not convinced that they have long-term guys apart from DJ Reed that really, and you know, he's a question mark just in terms of, yes, he was great last year, but do they see him as long-term with the size? I don't know. It's so weird seeing a guy like DJ Reed play corner, an outside corner position for the Seahawks at his size.
It really is. And a lot of people have been mocking Seattle with a cornerback with their first pick. And I kind of think, well, we fall into this trap every year saying the Seahawks need a cornerback and then they don't draft one or they wait until later rounds. And that, it's important to remember that that is what the Seahawks generally do and how their defense has been set up. Now, I wonder if things might change a little bit. The doubling of their blitzing since 2018 puts a lot more pressure on the cornerbacks to play man-to-man and cover and do a lot of those things. If you're blitzing a lot, your cornerbacks have to be able to cover. And we saw that was an issue at the start of last season. And I wonder if maybe they think, okay, if we're going to carry on blitzing this much, and if Jamal Adams is certainly going to blitz as much as he did, then we're going to need cornerbacks who can cover. But then they go and sign a Kelo Witherspoon, which is like, well, that's the classic Seahawks long, tall cornerback. That's not an expert coverage. If they'd signed like a 5'9", you know, 4'2 runner who's sticky in coverage and has got some experience of playing up and jostling man-to-man, then that'd be completely different. I mean, he's a Kelo Witherspoon is just a classic Seahawks pick.
So talking about him that draft season as the prototypical guy that the Seahawks could potentially take.
So if they're taking guys like that, then it makes you think, well, they're probably going to carry on doing what they've always done. They need a cornerback. I mean, they need to draft one, whether they sign Richard Sherman or not, for me, because that's all three prospective competitors to start a cornerback are out of contract at the end of the season. So you need somebody at least to try and draft and develop. And I'd like to see the Seahawks get back to that. You know, they haven't drafted many cornerbacks recently, and this is a draft where there are a lot of 32-inch arm cornerbacks who...
And they all play for Georgia, Rob.
They do. Yes, they do. There are three who play for Georgia, which is pretty incredible. And look, it wouldn't be a major surprise if DJ Daniel was the one who, of all the three, the one who didn't start last year, ends up being the best. But
is he the one that has kind of been discussed as a potential safety convert?
I don't know.
Okay,
he's the one who did very well at the Senior Bowl, I thought, in the red zone drills.
And he's the shorter of the three, though, right?
I think so. I think he's about 5'11".
Yeah.
But they're all good. I mean, Eric Stokes is very consistent. Tyson Campbell, I think there should be some concerns about his agility and change of direction. He doesn't play the ball enough. I think he's been a little bit overrated during this process. I prefer Eric Stokes, but there's something to like with all of them. They all fit Seattle. I think that it's an intriguing cornerback class. I think there are some players who you can often just look at a player and go, that's a Seahawk. And, you know, Israel Mukuama, as soon as you look at him, you think that's a Seahawks cornerback, you know, and they may well draft him because he looks like a Seahawks cornerback, and that's the kind of player they like to draft. He's got 34
inches. St. Juste is another one, right?
Yes, Benjamin St. Juste is very much another one. I mean, Mukuamba, I think he's going to be available in day three. I think St. Juste could go in round two. So I think round two, round three at worst. So Mukuamba's 6'4", 212, 34-inch arms. You know, that's their guy. Benjamin St. Juste is similar size. You know, lack of interceptions, but great pass breakups. I think he had 10 in his, you know, the last time he had a full season. Great, very, very educated player. Not very educated, very intelligent player, rather. You know, has learned a language, learned to speak English because he's from French Canada. So he had to learn how to speak English when he went to college to play football.
Hmm.
Learned it straight away. He's then got a master's degree in business, I think.
Wow.
Having learned English as in his late teens. Incredible. Just incredible individual. I've interviewed him. You know, he's one of the players that I have interviewed and thoroughly enjoyed that conversation. He's excellent. He would be a great pick for the Seahawks, but I just think he's going to go a little too high. Robert Rochelle, I thought he had a torrid time at the Senior Bowl, frankly, but he's got length, size, incredible speed. He's got everything that you want in a cornerback, just needs coaching up. I really like Ambry Thomas at Michigan, and when he was measured at the pro day, he had the long arms. His arms grew like half an inch from the Senior Bowl. Fancy that. when you watch him in 2019, he's always there. You know, he's right in the hip pocket of the receiver. He gets in and he tackles well. He's not the biggest guy. You know, he looks like a 6 foot, 190-pound corner, which I think is what he is. But if he has got the 32-inch arms, which is what they said at the pro day, then he ticks that box. And he does just get in there, you know, and he puts his head on a helmet and he'll make a tackle and he'll break up a pass. He'll pick off a pass. He anticipates well. He's sticky. I don't think he had an amazing Senior Bowl, but there were some flashes. I really like Ambry Thomas. I hope they consider him, but he's not. He doesn't look like Israel Mukuama. So that's the kind of thing where, you know, you worry. And then there's someone like Jason Pinnock who could be there on day three, and like he's somebody that like Seahawks Twitter have decided they need to adopt because he's got an amazing six pack. He's six whatever, runs in the 4.4s, incredible vertical jump, long arms, ticks every box. But I think he's given up something like, you know, a ridiculous number of downfield passes. Let me find the exact number on this. And this is the thing, because what do we know about Seahawks is that you have to stay on top.
Right.
You have to stay on top. So he gave up 6 touchdowns of plus 25 yards in 2019.
Oof. Oof.
So if he's getting beat downfield, he's not staying on top. Now, that might just be a technique thing that they can coach.
And that's true.
But I do think it does. I think it does. It means something that you cap. You don't take him in round 3 or 4. You wait to sort of the back end of the draft to take a chance on somebody like that. So there are cornerbacks in there, and I think they should draft one way or another. I'm just not sure. You know, when people, I've seen a lot of mock drafts. I mean, I think Dane Brugler did one recently, and he got the Seahawks drafting Ifeatu Melifonwu.
Yeah, he seems to be the common guy that people are mocking to Seattle. Yeah. And at least I feel like you've trained the draft community, Rob, around the idea of at least looking at arm length and height to a certain extent, because, yeah, so many mock drafts. How have we talked about this in the past that you'd see a corner mock to Seattle in round one and it doesn't even fit the prototypical measurement? So at least they've moved to this.
True. I just don't see it with Melifonwu. You know, just when you see those players and I hope it's not me just being biased because we know what we know about his brother.
Yeah.
Who was this incredible athlete who just looked, his tape was good. I think he went in round 2 in the end, didn't he? And we talked about him a lot.
Yep.
And he just didn't want it badly enough. You know, he just didn't, and on the field or off, you know, and he just flamed out. I mean, there was a guy who could have been Byron Jones earning Byron Jones money if he really wanted to be. And he isn't. He's out of the league. So I think he's out of the league. So I hope I'm not sort of damning his brother because of what we know about Obi Melifonwu. But on tape, I just didn't see physical, angry, oh my God, the Seahawks have to take him in round 2 or round 3. He has to be the guy that they take a cornerback earlier than they ever have done under Pete Carroll. I'd actually say
More of Mukuamu than if you're leaning that way, right?
No, I think if they were going to take someone earlier than they ever have done, it'd be Benjamin St. Juste because he is so long and lean and he is a bit more physical and he is very intelligent and he has shown the grit in his life to achieve what he has and transfer and make a career of at Minnesota when it didn't work at Michigan for him as a player. So I think that he's more likely to be somebody that they would draft in round 2 than Melifonwu. But I don't think either of them will be drafted by the Seahawks in round 2. I don't think they're going to take a corner that early. I think they'll take a corner in day 3 like they have done. And then we will finish the draft and we'll all be wondering whether a certain Mr. Sherman is coming back or not.
Well, see, no, and that's why I said Mukuamu for earlier in the draft, because, yeah, I understand that he may be viewed as a day three guy.
Very much so.
But I wonder if just the physicality and all those other parts would make them say, yeah, if we, and maybe, you know, they trade back and they still take him at the end of the second round, but just a guy that we can't leave without.
Possibly. I think he's a player that a lot of people won't have on their board, or they'll say he's an undrafted free agent. I just think that he's not a player that on tape you sort of bang the table for. He's a body type. He's a project. These are the traits we like. Let's get him in the building. He might not even get out of training camp, but we're going to give him a try and see if there's something there. It's Trey Flowers. It's, well, we like the body. He's a safety, but we'll try and convert him to cornerback. It's that kind of thing all over again, although McQuamer's not going to make that same dramatic transition. It's that kind of thing. So I think that, I think that he could be a guy round five, round six, that they potentially target, and that'll be their cornerback. And I think that first pick is probably, as I've said before, it's probably going to be offensive line, maybe receiver. That's kind of what I would expect.
Well, let's move on to safety while we're at defensive back. And this is another spot where you would look at and say, well, you got Jamal Adams, you got Quandre Diggs, you got the Pro Bowl safeties locked up. Shoot, you even have a second round pick who sat out last year, who's coming back, who can play safety. And, you know, how are they going to work him in? But I'd hate to gloss over this and see them take a safety when, again, there could be some special teams aspect to safety depth here that we wouldn't want to overlook. And so, yeah, what are your thoughts at safety?
There are guys that I can imagine them liking. You know, I think that they probably quite like Divine Diablo at Virginia Tech, but I think he's going to go too early. I think what two names that I'll throw in three names of guys that I liked on tape that I think they might have a look at. Shawn Davis at Florida is one of them. I just like the cut of his jib. I like the way that he plays. He's a bit of a playmaker. Fast, athletic. I think that he's somebody worth checking out if you want to check out safeties. I think the two guys at Cincinnati who I've come into late in the process, you know, I only watched them recently, Derek Forrest, James Wiggins, both ran similar times, both around the ball. You know, I'd say Forrest is probably more that strong safety type. Wiggins is more range, but they're both around the ball a lot. Played well for Cincinnati. Cincinnati will feel the impact of them both turning pro. And they are two guys, I think, you know, day three, if they wanted to draft somebody for a bit of depth, for a bit of special teams, they could do that. But I think when you've spent two first-round picks on a safety and a second-round pick on a safety and a fifth-round pick on Quandre Diggs and you paid him and you've spent a fourth-round pick on Hugo Amadi, it might be safe to say that they're okay at safety, shall we say.
It may be okay. Another spot where they may be okay after drafting a linebacker with their first round pick last year, after drafting Cody Barton and Ben Burkervin. Gosh, Rob, we didn't talk linebacker last year because we thought that they were good there, and then that's where they go first round. So I'm not going to let you go past linebacker without throwing out at least a few names. And we know that short shuttle times are important, and again, this could be an area where special teams factor in.
I mean, it was a real surprise last year, it has to be said. I mean, when you're paying Wagner and Wright what you were, and I think somebody made this point to me, it may have been Adam on the Seahawkers UK, that they were so worried about KJ Wright, it might have been Joe Fanucci, they were so worried about KJ Wright and his injury at the time of the draft, because I think he'd had surgery.
Right.
And I'm not sure they thought, is he going to be ready for the season? And I think they thought, well, imagine going into the season without KJ and having start Cody Barton, who just had a horrendous rookie season. And I think they looked at the range they were drafting and thought, there are three linebackers going to go there, Patrick Queen, Jordan Brooks, and the guy who went to the Chargers. And they thought, well, we'll take one of them. We like them. We think that's a good, we're grading in that kind of area.
And they had their first pick of linebacker, really, of that, because, well, they had... Yeah.
No, the Chargers took the guy first, but then there's Queen and Brooks... available. So I think they settled on that, and they were going to go in that area because of KJ. But then, of course, KJ came back and didn't just come back. He had one of the best seasons he's had. And now they're in this kind of weird place whereby they kind of want KJ back to play Sam, and yet they've got Brooks still, and they've got Wagner still, and then now they're kind of overloaded at linebacker. Look, KJ Wright hasn't gone anywhere, and you kind of think, well, what is his options now? You know, you kind of it feels almost like they're trending towards he is going to come back. It's just a seeing how it goes. Maybe the draft has to get out the way first or whatever. But if that doesn't happen, you know, some names. I'm a huge Buddy Johnson fan at Texas A&M, and the one thing the Seahawks always look for, if a guy runs an amazing short shuttle at linebacker, the chances are that the Seahawks will be enamored with that player. So of the top 15 short shuttle times run by a linebacker since Pete Carroll came to Seattle, they've drafted or signed a third of them, you know, and it's just what, and they haven't taken all these guys. You know, I can remember when Ben Heaney was in the draft and they didn't take him.
Von Miller would have been nice, but he never fell to him.
Von Miller would have been nice. Dorian O'Daniel, I remember saying that there's a good chance they were going to take him, and they never did because of that short shuttle. Dakota Allen was somebody that, you know, Nick Vigil. These were all players who kind of like looked at and thought they might take him because of this, and they didn't. So it's not like me saying, well, Buddy Johnson ran a 4.07 short shuttle. They're definitely going to take him. They might not. He might be another one we add to the list that they didn't take. But if they're going to draft a linebacker, I would think that it depends. I think he's a second round pick. If he's there in round four, they might just think the value's too good. And, you know, watching the Texas A&M Pro Day, it's like everybody else on the team, everyone was there, was like roaring him on every drill. And like I watched all of that. I mean, they weren't doing that for Bobby Brown. They weren't doing that for the other guys. It was just him.
Interesting.
It was like it was universally popular within that team. And that is what everybody says about him. And he plays with his hair on fire, and he flies around, and he's tough, and he's 230 pounds, but he sticks his head in there. He's rangy, he's got the agility, and, you know, I don't think he's a Sam linebacker necessarily, but I think he's better than Cody Barton. And, you know, if Bobby Wagner's 20 million salary next year is too rich for them, they're going to probably need another linebacker. So, you know, I like Buddy Johnson. You know, the other guys in this class, I think Pete Werner's just a, you know, he's the old school linebacker, but he's more athletic than people thought. Second round for me. Cam McGrone, I've got in second round. Didn't play last year. Flies all over the field. Really intense. Really quick. Really like the look of him. I've got him in second round. He may last. Dylan Moses was going to be a top 15 pick last year till he got his ACL. Didn't play as well. Had a slightly different role at Alabama. He could be there round three, round four. Chaz Surratt ran a good short shuttle. He could be an option for them. I thought KJ Britt had a good senior bowl, but I'm not sure that he fits in the sort of the profile that the Seahawks look for. But, you know, there are some reasonable linebackers in this draft.
Well, Rob, let's move over to the defensive line. And I think we can probably go relatively quickly over the defensive interior. I don't see this necessarily being a spot that they would go to first, unless it's a guy that they see as a first round type guy that just falls to the bottom of the second round and the value is just too good to pass on. But I kind of feel like they've kind of set themselves up, and maybe even all along the defensive line this offseason, they've gone so heavy in that area in free agency. I don't think that you can ever, you know, pass up on drafting edge guys in particular, but defensive line, I don't know. Are there any of those guys that you could see maybe as first round type talent that just have that opportunity to slip toward the back end of the second round?
I think Bobby Brown at Texas A&M warrants that kind of consideration because he's enormous. You know, I think he's well over 320. He's 35 inch arms, amazing short shuttle, amazing 40, explosive. He has absolutely everything that you want. And then you kind of think, okay, so he's got all these testing numbers. I'm going to go and watch the tape now and see if there's anything, you know, there. There has to be a reason why nobody was talking about this guy. And no, I thought his tape was superb. I thought he stacked offensive linemen extremely well. When you see a guy who's 321 pounds, he's got it now. When you see him running across the line to chase down ball carriers like he's 290 pounds, that jumps off the screen. He penetrates in the pass rush, knife through gaps, can swim. I think he does absolutely everything. I think he's somebody who will go earlier than people think, and everyone will go, wow, that's early. I didn't expect that. This is the kind of guy the NFL likes. I think if you're a 4-3 or a 3-4, you've got to be looking at this guy. I think Bobby Brown is absolutely fantastic talent. Let me just run through some of the numbers. So we're talking about 321-pound, 6'4" defensive tackle with a 35-inch arms, 85.5-inch wingspan. Incredible. Ran a 5.04 40 at 320 and a 4.58 short shuttle. You know, some of the receivers in this draft ran a slower short shuttle than that. 33-inch vertical and a 9.5 broad. He is an elite physical talent, and not enough people are talking about him. There are some people talking about him now. I've got him in round two. I think if someone took him at the end of round one, I'd take my hat off to them and say, well played, sir. You know, it's not a reach at all for me. You should be considering me in that range. I think you're right. I think the fact that the Seahawks have, when they cut Jaron Reed and then immediately signed Al Woods, that to me was a sign that they're not going to be dabbling in this draft. And the amount of, you know, stuff they've done on defensive end, and they've got like 11 defensive linemen now, Alden Smith, Benson Mayowa, bringing back Dunlap, Kerry Hyder, that is not indicative of a team that is going to go out and draft a defensive end lineman in this draft. And look, defensive tackle, the options are very weak. I like Davion Nixon with his 35-inch arms. Bob McGinn wrote that he's got a few character concerns and some teams have taken him off the board. I think six have taken him off the board that he said. Now, he's got a learning disability. I wouldn't call that a character concern.
Oh, yeah.
So there might be something else that teams are worried about. But a learning disability might lead to some teams dropping him around or two or something. I mean, he's tentatively got a range within. He could go round two, could go round five.
Yeah.
But he's incredibly agile, very, very, very good, very disruptive, loads of tackles for a loss. Like I said, 35-inch arms. He's a really good player. I'd consider him in round two, round three. I don't think the Seahawks will, though. I think Al Woods signing put paid to that. There isn't anybody else really that about. I mean, I like Darius Stills. He was one of the best players I interviewed in this pre-draft process. He's got short arms and he's very disruptive. Loads of tackles for a loss. I think like 20 in 22 games, something like that. Loads of sacks. Love everything about him. But he's not the Seahawks profile that they go for.
I guess, though, too, and just to touch on the Al Woods thing, I suppose it could be one of those types of hedges. It's not a type of contract that would be prohibitive, that if you found a guy that you loved and there just wasn't a spot for Al Woods come cut down time to 53, I could see them moving on from him.
Could be a hedge, you're right.
Yeah.
Could easily be a hedge. It's just the options are so weak in this draft.
It seems like bigger things to go for too early on in the draft, right?
Yeah, and with three picks, like if they had 10 picks, I'd be like, yeah, you're probably right. But, you know, with three, and if they turn that into six or seven, which they probably will, I still think then, you know, it's like, well, do you want to take a D10 to tackle here, or do you want to take a receiver, a corner, an O-liner, whatever, or do you want to take like Al Woods replacement, and that'll probably win the day. But if they draft Bobby Brown, you can all, anybody who listens to this can have the mental image of me dancing around my front room because I just love that. I just love the idea of drafting him. I think he's a terrific player. I think there are a couple of guys they might look at later on. Taquan Graham is explosive and he's kind of a little bit different to what they have, a little bit lighter, 290, long arms, 35-inch arms. Could be more disruptive. So it's kind of a project for them day three that they can bring in and try and work into the rotation. Marquis Spencer played end, but he's 300 pounds. Actually looked better at end than he does inside, even though he's 300 pounds. But, you know, he's going to have to play inside at the next level. You're not going to have a 300-pound Sam Leo. That's not going to work. So, yeah, he's going to have to move inside. And then at end, I think there are really good sort of early round options. Azeez Olajari, Jalen Phillips. I like Peyton Turner. I like Joe Tryon. Jason Owe's got the profile, if not the tape. Quitty Pay, I think, is hit and miss. After those guys have gone, yeah, scraping the barrel.
All right, Rob. Well, let's close this off with some of the guys on the edge then, because I've said it. I don't think that, you know, even if you have Carlos Dunlap and Benson Mayowa and you don't know the status of Daryl Taylor, I think that it's still there's potential for depth even beyond the guys that they have for the next 2 years on the team.
Yeah, I think the problem is because they've only got 11 on there, and if LJ Collier becomes a full-time defensive tackle or they trade or cut Rasheem Green, I don't know what you get from in a trade, maybe like a seventh or something like that, or if Daryl Taylor is finished, you know, if he's just never going to be able to get over this having the metal plate in his leg and will never be able to get to a level where he can play professional football, then yes, I think, and look, I'm worried about defensive end for Seattle because it is very short-term. You've basically just brought you've got Carlos Dunlap and a bunch of guys. That's basically it. I mean, let's not forget that Kerry Hyder played with Arik Armstead and Javon Kinlaw for most of last year. You know, it helps. It's in the same way that Jaron Reed was boosted by Carlos Dunlap and Frank Clark. I would suggest that Kerry Hyder was boosted. And there's a reason why Kerry Hyder was available for like $2 million as opposed to some of these other guys who flew off the board for like $7-8 million. It's because he's a 29, 30-year-old journeyman. That's right. What he is. So you've got him. You've got Alden Smith, who... Yeah, look, it's great. I like the Alden Smith signing.
Oh, yeah, but it's fine. It's just not... It doesn't excite me. There's not a whole lot of guys out there that would have done that.
And let's be right. There's a chance Alden Smith won't be on the roster. And you've got Benson Mayowa, who, you know, fine. He's a guy... He's a rotational end, isn't he? There's nothing beyond that, really. And I mean, a lot of Seahawks fans still talk about Daryl Taylor, but it's like, well,
we don't know.
Let's see.
The Seahawks have all the information with regard to him, so
I'll buy into him when I've seen him play a game, like in Seattle. Until then, I'm going to assume that he's not going to play because of what has happened. So it's just that's it. So yeah, I think it would be beneficial to have an edge, but with so few picks, and like I'm looking at the later round options. I like Adi Ogundeji from Notre Dame. I think he's got something about him. I thought he had a decent senior bowl. He's somebody nobody talks about. He might be there even in the sixth, seventh, for all I know. I mean, I've got him ranked in round four, but that's me. You know, I don't know how the league views him. I thought he's got some decent tape. I think he's got the traits that you look for, some of the testing numbers that you look for. He's got the length, so I like him. I think he could be somebody who could provide some value on day three. You've got a guy called Joshua Kando, who was a massive, I think he was like the 11th overall recruit in his recruiting year. Huge hype as a recruit. If you just watch his highlights, you'd think he was a top 10 pick. And he's got everything. Size, length, speed, everything. But his tape's just, if you actually watch the games, it's all over the place. And like he just turns it on every now and again. But for a round four pick, I'd take a flyer on him.
Sure.
You know, he's kind of like an Arden Key type project, I guess. But he, you know, that's not worked for the Raiders. Doesn't mean that this won't work for somebody who takes a chance on Joshua Kando. So you've got him. I don't know where Chris Rom's going to go. I mean, some people insist he's going to go round two. I think for a 230-pound pass rusher who's not done any testing in the pro day, who probably is better off at outside linebacker or Sam, he's more day three than round two. Could they draft him as a Sam Leo? Yes. I think he might be a bit too small and a bit too light for them. You've got Joseph Asai at Texas, who's stiff as a board. I don't think he's an edge for Seattle particularly. I do think he's more of a linebacker. A lot of his pressures were stunts and flying around and not beating a tackle 1v1. But he's very explosive, very quick, very athletic. A lot of people like him. Ronnie Perkins has got a weird body type, but he I don't think he kind of fits Seattle with his testing either. But he's very aggressive, very angry, gets after it, but I think he's going to go too early. And then, you know, you're talking about your Hamilcar Rashad, who had a terrible 2020 mess of a season, kind of undermined everything he did before that. He's got some of the things they like. Rashad Weaver's got some of the things they like at Pittsburgh. Ellison Smith had a good senior bowl. Bradley King at Baylor's got some of the traits he likes. There are some guys that they could consider, but again, it all comes down to you've got three picks, you know, and if you turn that into six, seven picks, you've got to prioritize, haven't you? And I think the priorities may lie elsewhere when you've signed as many defensive linemen as you have.
Now, you interviewed Peyton Turner out of Houston, yes. And you mentioned you don't have any testing numbers for him on your blog, but you know he was good at the Senior Bowl. Is not having testing numbers for him, is that something that would allow him to slide to late in the second round?
Because he's had some injuries, and that is a slight concern, but his tape is fantastic. And his senior bowl was really good. And he just looks amazing. You know, he's 6'5". I think he's got like long arms.
Yeah, 35-inch arms, 270. I feel like that just the prototype.
Exactly. And he started off inside. And then he moved outside. And I was like saying to him when we did the interview, I was like, why were they playing you inside? Look what you can do off the edge. You know, and he was like, yeah, I know. He loves playing outside now, but he think he can see himself as like an inside out, that he could still do that if he needs to. I think he's a terrific player. You know, I think round two for him. And yeah, do you know what? The injuries and the lack of play, lack of games and lack of testing numbers might have an impact there, but smart teams will take him early, and I think he might go too early. And again, you know, it all comes down to, you know, again, if the Seahawks had what they had last year, 2 seconds and a first, you know, you take your center or your tackle with the first pick, you get a receiver with your second, and a guy like Peyton Turner with the third, I'm down with that. They don't have that. They have 56, 129, and a throwaway seventh. So it's going to be very interesting to see what
they
do.
But
they
do have to draft three players with those picks. So
unless
they
trade them all away. Yeah. I mean, it's I'm fascinated. Look, what, like, I just cannot imagine John Schneider only picking three times. When you do these simulators, though, you can kind of, like the Pro Football Network one, you could get to like 11 picks if you want to, and I think that's just unrealistic. But
right. Yeah, I think six or seven is probably, I would be shocked if it wasn't at least.
It's reasonable.
Yeah.
It's reasonable. And I think that teams, when, you know, as I'm saying, certain players will fall that you don't expect. I think then what you might see is third round, fourth round, teams starting to move up. Oh, this guy's there that we never thought we were going to get a chance of getting. We'll move up and give up a couple of fifths.
Sure.
You know, it's that kind of thing. So I do think there will be opportunities to move down. It's just how far do you want to drop? Because if you're already not picking in the top 56 or 55, then at what point do you want to enter the game? At what point do you think, right, there's the drop-off? Who are you targeting at 56? Where are they going to be? Where are they going to go if you fall back a little bit? You're still going to be able to get that guy. That's how it's worked. I have to say, with all the simulations I've done, dropping back into the 65, 70 range, there's always been somebody that I really like there. Now, that's just one simulator, and we don't know how realistic it's going to be. I think that reasonably, though, they will be able to move back and get somebody they really like.
Yes, it's difficult to think that John Schneider would come out of the draft with only three picks. And I don't know, maybe he'll surprise us, but I have to imagine that there's going to be some trades. And most likely with that first pick, unless it's just something that they can't pass up. But gosh, if you don't trade back from that first pick, what do you really have to trade at that point apart from giving up future picks to move back up into this draft?
Do you know, it's funny though, that the whole thing, only having the three picks, I'm a bit surprised that they've managed to get themselves into this sort of situation, you know, with only three picks, you know, and I think
that's what leads me to think that maybe there's some intentionality to it.
But it's little things like, how do you get yourself into a position where, you know, you leave it as late as you do to sort the Jaren Reed situation out? You end up cutting him and getting absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and like people were on my blog saying, oh, just get a, you know, trade Jaren for a third. I was like, you ain't getting a third. And they were like, well, why not? He's this age, he's this. And I was like, you ain't getting a third for Jaren Reed. But I think you could have got a sixth, you know, if you sort of made that move right off the start of the free agency, move him for a sixth or whatever, you might be able to shift that contract. It would have cost you to trade him, but you still could have maybe moved the contract for a throwaway pick. You can't do that. And then, you know, and again, so they miss out on Kevin Zeitler. And by the sounds of things, they were never going to sign him. Apparently, he was so determined to stay on the East Coast. Apparently, he loves the AFC North. And he's played for, what, two of the teams already. He's now gone to a third team in the AFC North. He likes that division. There's never any chance of getting him. But by not landing a him or a Joe Tooney or a... Yeah, and there was Coy Lindsey was the center, wasn't he? It went as well.
But he wasn't really talked about too much as far as being linked to Seattle, so...
No, but by not getting any of those, you didn't have to give up a pick for Gabe Jackson, who apparently was going to get cut, but you end up having to, you know, which was the same as Rodney Hudson, but then you didn't trade in another pick for him, so you lose a pick there.
I'm curious though, Rob, would you have rather traded away would you have rather done some kind of swap with the Raiders? So you maybe give up the second, but you get maybe a third or fourth back and get Rodney Hudson, or trade a fifth and get Gabe Jackson?
Yeah, I think I'd probably trade a fifth and get Gabe Jackson. I mean, I really like Rodney Hudson, but I thought a third for a guy of his age was... But it's a kind of move that the Cardinals can probably afford to make with already having... They might get the third round pick back. You know, one trade down from 16 and you get that pick back anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good move for them. But for the Seahawks, it was like, you really want to trade out. You want to give up 56 and like, you're right, you might get another pick back, but then are you picking in round four or the late third? You know, it never made sense. So I'd rather do the Gabe Jackson one. I don't know. And listen, I'm not saying for a second that I'd rather have a fifth round rookie than Gabe Jackson. It's just, it's a kind of trade that they're very good at in Seattle. And John Schneider's played a masterstroke again in these kind of guys. Quandre Diggs was a fifth rounder. It's just, I don't really understand how they've ended up in this position where everything is so short term now. You know, everything. There's no real long term planning. They don't hit on draft picks very much anymore. They don't have answers at a number of key positions beyond this year. They've given up two first round picks for a player, and he hasn't signed a contract extension. And we're all sat here still. No one talks about it because we've had this whole Russell Wilson thing to talk about. So no one ever says, is there anything happening there? You know, are you going to sign Jamal Adams or are you not? And if you're not, you know, should you try and trade him? Because you don't want to lose him in 2 years for nothing. It's like, what exactly is the plan? And everyone goes, well, they don't sign anybody till after the draft anyway. It's like, well, they just signed Tyler Lockett like right. 2 weeks ago. So why, you know, you make a trade like that for the price of like a quarterback. That was like a trade. You know, it cost more than it cost for the Chiefs to trade up for Mahomes. So you make the trade for that and you go, okay, you've made that trade. We're not going to sign him to an extension straight away. But you still got like September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April to decide what you're going to do. That's enough time for me. This isn't just like re-signing a guy. You gave up so much for him. And, you know, I just think if you either sign him or move him, it's as simple as that, really. You've got to, the clock's ticking now. You've got like 10 or 12 days to the draft. Let's either see an extension or
he just needs to do like Russ and set a deadline. And get it done.
Well, listen, it'd probably work. And look, he doesn't seem to be in too much of a rush either. I mean, he's tweeting positive things about Alden Smith coming in. So he's not kicking up a fuss about any of this. And they may well have communicated and just said, we're not going to do anything after the draft. Stay tuned. We're going to get it done. We'll sort this out. But then I don't like that either, because then it kind of says, well, yeah, we're going to give you what you want. And is that $20 million a year? And I don't want to spend $20 million a year on a safety, even if he does blitz eight times a game. So
yeah, I don't think that they're going to do anything silly in terms of that. I think that they'll look at...
Did for Wagner.
Okay.
$18 million a year.
I don't know. I guess, Bobby, it's different because you drafted him. He came up within the system. But I still think you look at that structure of, okay, what's he making next year? What would he make under the franchise tag the following year? What's the franchise tag then if you were to do that far out, you know, and build the contract that way?
That's that and that all makes sense. And I've thought about this a lot. So I was thinking that the franchise tag for a safety is, what is it about? I'm guessing it's about 12, 30 million or something like that.
Yeah.
So you say, right, it's 9 and then it's 12. So you could do that, Jamal, if you want to do that. And you could say to Jamal Adams, listen, or you could say to his agent, rather, the franchise tag is this. And if we trade him because he doesn't want to sign the deal we're offering, well, he's just going to go somewhere else and they're going to have the same conversation with him. Because they'll say, well, the franchise tag is this. And then in the following year, it'll be this. So if you want $20 million, you're never going to get $20 million because, you know, the franchise tag for the next 3 years, we're protected by the franchise tag. But then after that, you can't tag a player three times. So. Yeah. After that second tag, you will have to do something at that point. And in the final year, his signing will be huge. So you have to make a decision before then anyway. But the problem is that this is, you know, good luck telling Jamal Adams he's only worth sort of $15 million a year.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, we want to make you the highest paid safety in the league, Jamal. $15 million a year. And he'll go, well, I'm not a safety, I'm a weapon. And that's the thing. I'm a pass rusher. I set the record.
What if you did like a Shaq Barrett-style contract? Do you think that would get the job done?
To be honest, I don't know the ins and outs of the Shaq Barrett contract, so I'm not sure.
I think he's around 17 APY type number.
I'm leery of it. For a number of reasons. I won't bore everybody to death about this again, but I don't think he's a great fit. I worry about the injuries. I don't think they're going anywhere because of the style of play that he is and the aggressive downhill blitzing him all the time. I think encourages injuries. Playing him at the line, he hurt his shoulder running into a tight end against the Rams. You know, it's that kind of injury that's going to happen. He's so active. It's like the thing about Cam was an enforcer, but Cam wasn't as active as Jamal Adams. Cam was kind of like, I'm just going to hide in the tall grass and then I'm going to hit you. Whereas Jamal Adams is kind of like, well, I'm going to fly all over the place and I'm just going to throw my body around and that's the kind of player who gets injured.
Right.
And I worry about that.
Yeah.
And I'm also worried about paying the two of them. I mean, even if it's just a franchise tag in 2022, Wagner and Adams being on $35 million a year just is like insane to me. Like, it's a linebacker and a safety. Like, just draft a linebacker and draft a safety and bring in a darn offensive lineman and a great defensive. Can we not get a D tackle who can rush the passer? Can we have a young pass rush that are good? Can we have an O-line that is not stuck together? Can we have these things? They seem to win games for teams.
I came up with a solution, Rob. I know what the Seahawks need to do with Jamal Adams.
What's that?
They trade him for Nick Chubb.
Do you know what? I would be down with that. You know, why not? And do you know what? I'm looking forward to the tweets after this.
He's Rob Staton, Seahawks draft blog. A big thanks to him for coming on. And leave Rob alone with the comments about Jamal Adams. Yes, he has an opinion on Jamal Adams. I disagree with Rob on his opinion of Jamal Adams. I like how he flies around the field. And yes, there are some injury concerns that come along with that. And that's probably a good argument for not giving him a long-term deal. If you want to continue to play out the franchise tag, it's a good reason to why you don't pay him just an astronomical amount of money. So I can see some of Rob's points. I agree with him in some situations too. I can't see them actually trading him away unless they don't see any kind of way that the two sides can come to some sort of an agreement. I just think that you want playmakers, and having Bobby Wagner on the team, yes, it's a big contract, but he's also still one of the best linebackers in the NFL. So that's a guy that you got to pay. And speaking of people who I got to thank for paying, it's our executive producers, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, and Young Choi. Again, I'm going to wait for Adam to officially welcome our new members of the flock. So Joshua, Saban, Ryan, sorry to keep you waiting. Really appreciate you going to getintheflock.com and helping to support the show. And it just wouldn't be a show if I didn't close this out with a Better at Life nominee for the week. Still, it doesn't feel the same at the end of the show with Adam not here telling somebody to do better, but it also doesn't feel the same if I just close out the show. So I have to honor someone who is better at life than Skip Bayless this week. And so I'm going to give it to Nathan and Kevin from the Seahawks Nest. You know, if you're looking for more draft talk, if this wasn't enough, Nathan and Kevin are going to be helping fill up the Field Goals podcast feed with draft content this week. They're going to be talking offense. They're going to be talking defense. So as soon as you listen to this show, you can head on over to the Field Goals podcast, listen to Nathan and Kevin talk offense. And for them helping me out, hooking all of us up with more draft talk this week, going into the draft, Kevin and Nathan, Better at Life than Skip Bayless. And you have even more to look forward to later on this week. I have an interview scheduled ahead of the draft. So even without a first round pick, we've got a lot to talk about going into this week's draft. And then Adam should be back home coming off this long set of jobs. And I know he's going to be looking forward to reacting to this year's draft class. So with that, there's only one thing left to say. Go Hawks!